This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards on the Line. I'm your host, Christopher D. Littlefield, and with me this week is the creator of the Trek FM network himself, Christopher Brian Jones. Christopher, thank you for coming on Postcards with me today.
Well, thank you, Christopher. But no, just call me Chris.
Okay.
People online know me as C. Brian Jones, and so some people call me Brian on Twitter, but Chris is good.
Okay. I like to call you CBJ myself.
Okay, you can call me whatever you want. Just don't call me JL, that's all. or C. Actually, people call me CJ. That's actually what I go by here in Japan at the office and such.
Yeah. Well, it's really great to have you on this week. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Yeah, it's great to be on. I think it's not the first time I've talked about Picard, because Matthew and I did that mid-season episode of The Ready Room. But apart from that, yeah, it's only my second time to talk about Picard since the premiere on mic.
Wow. Yeah. And I'm sure that you have a lot of opinions and things to say about it.
I do. I'll try to hold back a little bit. Try not to get too animated here.
Yeah. Well, today we're discussing the fan response to the season finale of Star Trek Picard Et in Arcadia Ego Part 2. If you'd like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special Postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 391 comments on the Postcards thread, which is an 11% increase from our last episode. Listeners, keep those comments coming because we love your feedback. Well, CBJ, make it so.
All right, so it looks like I have the honor of reading the first comment here. This is from Peter Setnicker. And Peter says, amazing episode and amazing first season. I was in awe the entire time. I can't wait to see where Picard is going to go on his next adventure. I'm overjoyed they found a way to tie up the loose ends from Nemesis and make Data's death more meaningful. So, Christopher, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree. I think that it did. It was a really nice epilogue to Nemesis with, you know, the kind of he's still alive, but he isn't. And I don't know about amazing first season overall, because I do have a lot of criticisms about that. I did enjoy the episode a lot. Yeah, that's kind of where I am with Peter's comment. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, amazing is not how I would describe it. I certainly was not in awe. I thought it was a solid season. I thought there were some absolutely brilliant moments. There were some other moments where I was confused or I felt let down. I just watched the episode during dinner before we recorded tonight. And that moment in the finale where we have Picard and Data in the quantum reconstruction is just absolutely beautiful. The dialogue is wonderful. The moment is beautiful. I'm not sure if I'm one of those people who felt like we needed to somehow conclude Data's death after Nemesis, because I always thought it was quick for sure. But I also thought that Data's death in Nemesis always made sense to me, because his story was always this journey to become human, to find humanity. And in that act of sacrificing himself for Picard, I felt like he achieved his goal. And although it was sudden, I felt like it was closure for his character. However, I do like what they did here in this episode, and I'm very glad that we did have this final moment between the two of them, and I thought it was very touching.
Yeah, I totally see what you mean, and I do, and I agree with that. I think that it does make sense that he sacrificed himself for his captain and his friend, and that that was kind of the ultimate human sacrifice, the ultimate journey in humanity. This is almost like a coda to his life, you know, and he chooses his death. He chooses to actually fully cease to exist, which is kind of to me goes even much more deeper philosophically, and kind of feels like this episode and this coda in the episode in particular to me is kind of the most evolved philosophically Star Trek episode and moment that we've seen.
Mm. Well, it does call back to, if you remember, when he first asked Geordi to put the chip in that would allow him to have emotions and such. And maybe it was actually before that. I may be misremembering, but Data has said before that it concerned him. He realized that he would outlive all of his friends. So this is something that was on Data's mind as we have followed his journey. So it doesn't surprise me that he would want this kind of closure.
That's right. That's a really good point.
And what I do find interesting, though, is because I said a moment ago that I felt that Data's death of Nemesis was fitting, and that never bothered me. But the one thing that I didn't really consider until this series is the impact that Data's death had on Picard. And I think that's what we have followed through this season. And I think that's one of the strong threads. I watched Remembrance last night. And after getting to the end of this, when you go back to Remembrance, there's a little bit of a different feel when Picard interacts with Data.
Hmm. I'll have to go back and binge it all, of course. Hmm. Christian Alonso, my friend in California that I met at STLV, says, "Beautiful send-off for Data, a farewell he deserved. A surprise to see Riker and an enormous fleet, but no Captain Worf. We got to see the pieces of Picard come back together. The crew is no longer broken. The handhold of Seven and Raffi. Yes, yes, I am here for this." So that was an unexpected moment at the end, which I didn't mind. I didn't like that Raffi was taking shots again personally, but I suppose this is all still part of her journey.
Yeah, that moment at the end was kind of thrown in there and came out of the blue. What I really like here about Christian's comment is that when he talks about the pieces of Picard come back together, that's really interesting, because I remember when I watched Remembrance the first time and I watched that title sequence, and you see those pieces flying around, falling into place, and at that point in time, you don't really know what that means visually. And as you follow the series, and you follow not only Picard, but pretty much all the characters, all the people he assembles as his crew, they are all people that have these broken pieces in their lives. And now when you watch that title sequence in the finale, again, it has that different meaning. It's not just pieces falling or flying around anymore. It's like they are falling into place. And I felt like we did get that closure. And I thought that was quite a clever use of the title sequence.
Yeah.
From a creative standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I didn't watch the opening title sequence the last few episodes because I didn't want any spoilers of any guest appearances.
Oh, no. I did avert my eyes. I did, especially for this one. As soon as I saw a special guest star, Jonathan Frakes, I turned away because I was like, if Worf is in here, I don't want to see the name Michael Dorn on the screen. I really wish that all these actors would refuse those title sequence credits, because it does spoil things for the viewer.
I do too. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. How did you feel about not getting Captain Worf in here?
I'm okay with it. I kind of wanted to see him. I just thought that would have been a really kick-ass moment. But, you know, it's all right. Riker's was pretty great.
Yeah, I did not want to see Worf here. And it's not because I don't like Worf. In fact, I love Worf, especially after he went to DS9. And Matthew and I had a great privilege of having Michael Dorn on the Orb some years ago, and he was just absolutely delightful to talk to.
Wonderful.
What I want is when Worf comes on, I want him to actually be around. I don't want him to have a cameo for 2 minutes at the end of the series. So in that sense, I was glad that we didn't see him. Now, I did have the thought, like, well, maybe if the fleet shows up, and I had this thought when I'm watching it, maybe the fleet's going to show up, maybe the Enterprise is leading the fleet. But within the context of the story that we got this season, having Riker come back into service temporarily and lead that fleet, that made the most sense for Picard.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. I think it had to be Riker. It had to be indicative of that relationship in the past and what it is, what it has become in this series.
Yeah. Although I'll eat one of Riker's pizzas anytime.
Oh, yeah. With or without bunny corn sausage?
Well, I've never had bunny corn sausage, believe it or not. So I might be up for trying that, as long as it's not venomous. All right. So our next comment is from Karen Chuplis. And Karen says, well, I really loved it. Not in a stand-up hurrah way, but in a quiet, teary, blooming of hope in my heart way. My favorite line is, fear is an incompetent teacher. That should really be up there with, the Federation was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits. I agree, that was a wonderful line. Not only do I think it should be up there with that line, I think it should be above that line, because I think, you know, when Patrick Stewart talked about why he came back and he decided to do the series, and he made the comments about, you know, we live in an age where we need that commentary again. And it's something I thought he delivered very, very well in the pilot episode. This is much shorter. It's much more concise. Fear is an incompetent teacher. And right now in our world, we see so many leaders who are trying to govern on fear. And absolutely, fear is an incompetent teacher. So I could not agree more with Karen.
Yeah, me too, Chris. It's always hard for me to pick which comments I'm going to include for Karen, because she points out a lot of really interesting things and is very, very excited all the time, which I love.
That's true.
This line really hit me personally because, yes, you're right. Globally and on the larger scale, there's a lot of leading through fear, or at least an attempt to. But I think there's also a lot of internalized fear that we let kind of govern us and run us. I personally,
absolutely,
yeah, I fight those demons a lot, and it just really sounded like a gong when I heard that line. I loved it.
Yeah.
There are a few other lines in this episode that we'll get to that had the same effect on me.
Well, you're not alone. I'm in the same boat.
Beta Artemis Belinda on Twitter says, a truly Star Trek ending. Love, not fear. Understanding, not ignorance. Peace, not war. And openness, not secrecy. That's how we save the day. With all that's going on in the world right now, these are the lessons we needed to learn more than ever. Yeah, Belinda, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another thing that really stood out to me at the end of this finale. Now, overall, I thought the finale was fairly weak. But the ending, if you contrast, and I know some fans get really upset when we contrast Picard and Discovery, or Discovery and anything else. But take a moment here seriously, because if we talk about the new Star Trek series, the modern Star Trek series, there's a stark difference here between Discovery and Picard. Discovery ends with this huge battle and the entire universe is going to end. Picard ends on a very quiet note in what I thought was very much a return to the Next Generation style. It was calm at the end. It was philosophical. It was Picard and Data. And it was once again Picard, who was a huge influence on me when I was in university, because I was in university when The Next Generation was on first run. And it's that sort of calming message that strikes you and helps you see that there's always hope and that there's always a path to a better future. And also Data's comments about mortality and the finite nature of relationships and how that adds meaning to life. This, I thought, was all so thoroughly Star Trek in a way that I have felt let down by Discovery. Again, not to pit two against the other, It's merely an observation about modern Star Trek being written by the same showrunners, in a sense, certainly in Kurtzman, and also being influenced by the times that we live in. And it's two different approaches, I think, to commentary on the time in which we live.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I couldn't agree more. There was this return to diplomacy at the end and just this pleading to find the better part of other people.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, our next one, Robert J. Geiger, says that opening shot of the Borg cube with the waves lapping up against it was positively gorgeous. My new wallpaper. And Patrick Carlin says, nothing would make me happier than you giving me an excuse to kick your treacherous Tal Shiar ass. Or as Riker says it, Tal Shiar ass. But Robert, I totally agree with Robert. I mean, that shot was gorgeous of the Borg cube.
Beautiful.
You know, it reminded me like in Generations when we see the Enterprise D crashed
on
the planet. Or in Voyager when we saw those moments where Voyager was down on a planet. It's so striking. Like, you're not used to seeing these ships in daylight on a planet. And that was really gorgeous.
There's something cool about this mix of the complete technological aspect of the Borg cube, and then just with this beautiful water, you know, the waves and the beach and all of that. There's just something that it's just such a stark contrast with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's serenity with the beach versus this sort of, it's not, I mean, a Borg cube is not chaos. It's very organized, but it's, you know, it's got that kind of frantic feel to it, I guess.
Yeah, and cold.
I might describe it as. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Patrick's comment about Riker is interesting. And I don't know if we get to this later on or not, but I've seen some criticism of Riker's line, like, well, Riker wouldn't say anything like that. That didn't feel right.
Oh, but I think he would. Absolutely.
I think he would too, because think about Insurrection when he's got the joystick out and he's flying the Enterprise by himself with a little joystick. I mean, he's, I'm going to ram it down their throats. You
know? This moment reminded me of the end of Insurrection.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
It felt very much like a TNG film in these moments.
Yeah, I can totally see Riker saying that. So to me, that didn't feel wrong at all. I will say about Jonathan Frakes' performance, though, it's interesting. The first time I watched this episode, I felt like Frakes was completely over the top. I felt like Riker felt unnatural. And it felt like they shot these scenes without, you know, having the context of what was going on. But then the second time I watched it, it got better. And the third time I watched it, I thought, that seems about right. So it's kind of interesting how like a first viewing can color your take on things. Perhaps maybe there are other factors you're not thinking of that make you feel that way. But like tonight when I watched it, I still feel it feels a little bit off to me, but he also hasn't played that character in 20 years. And in the end, I thought, nah, that seems about like Riker.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't been up there in a long time. So, you know, sitting in the captain's chair. But I think we also, the first time we watch it, we're all as fans who cannot wait to see what comes next. We are on such high alert. We are noticing every little change, every little instance, any little tiny nitpick or flaw or something, or perceived flaw. You know, that certainly does color, I think, the first viewing.
I think the other thing is with Jonathan Frakes, with Marina Sirtis, with Jeri Ryan, they haven't played these characters in so long. I think there's some excitement on their part playing these characters again. And I think that comes through a bit on screen, especially like in Nepenthe. I really felt that from both Marina and Jonathan. Mm-hmm. More from Jonathan. I thought Marina did actually quite a phenomenal job.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Probably the best, possibly. And I shouldn't say this because I don't like it when fans say this because there's so many hours, these characters. But in terms of writing for Troy and Troy having something to do, I thought this was probably the best Troy that we have gotten on Star Trek. Because
I totally agree.
You know, she was written with modern eyes where we no longer have this style of writing where the female characters tend to take a backseat to the male characters, which was the case certainly in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I thought Marina did a fantastic job. But I think that excitement of coming back and being able to play these characters again does come through a little bit in the performances.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it for you too if you were doing it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Except I would be much, much worse at acting than they are. Absolutely.
Pete Fotopoulos says, what's the best way to advocate for the sense? Become one. And Pierre Larocco is a first-time commenter. And he says, all I can say is, wow, such a fitting end to Data. I always felt that he deserved more and he got it. Also, can I say Captain Riker? Well, Pierre, thank you so much for your first comment, and we are very happy to have you in the conversation. Pete, yeah, become a synth or become, you know, half synth, half whatever, and who better to represent them than that?
Okay, well, that's an interesting point. So when you say become a half synth or whatever, what do you mean by that?
So his experiences and his memory engrams and all that stuff comes from his actual biological experience. And that right. copy is in the body now, is in the golem there. So,
right.
so he's kind of the link, right? In between.
Yeah.
Because it's not an original programming.
Right, right. Yeah, it's an interesting point. You know, I don't know what I think about Picard being a synth now.
Yeah.
I have actually rather complex thoughts about this, probably too much to go into here.
Well, I feel conflicted about it too. So, you know.
Yeah, I think I'll go into it when I do Notes on the Line, where I can just really, really dig into my thoughts. On the one hand, I feel like it's a cop-out to have Picard die and then have him be resurrected. It's sort of the way I felt about Data's death and Nemesis, and then B4 is there. But it's not the same thing. And I do think that, again, within the context of this story, the idea of Picard advocating on behalf of Data and synthetic life, and then becoming synthetic life at the end, makes sense in a way. But it's complicated.
It's very complicated.
And I don't know what I think about a season two of this show where we're watching a Picard who we know is not Picard.
Right.
You know, if you think back to, and these are much more subtle moments, but I think fans sometimes forget that in Deep Space Nine, Miles O'Brien died, and that's another Miles.
Right. That was brought up in the comments as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Harry yeah. Kim died in Voyager, and that's another Harry Kim. So it's not like we haven't had characters die in the past and they've been replaced by another, like a duplicate of themselves. But again, this is a little bit different again, because here Picard acknowledges that he's now an android. So I don't know what I think about this, but I think it's an interesting twist to the story of Picard and of yeah. Data and their relationship with one another.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think about it a bit more.
Yeah, me too.
All right. So our next comment is from Larry S.J. And Larry says, so we have to watch Data die again? What hell is this? Also loved it. Nicely done. And then Luke Campbell says, dream ending though. Picard, engage. End credits play. Cut to teaser. Spot 2 leaps into Elnor's lap. Elnor, a cat. I love this because, yes, that should be the ending of the show.
Right.
Teaser. As I've said on Twitter, however, this will be the storyline of the upcoming Star Trek Short Treks, Spot 2, Synthetic Poopaloo, which is all about Elnor and Spot 2. And as I realized today, like me, Elnor would definitely be a huge Alf fan. Because,
oh my God,
all the cat, you know, I mean, I don't mean Elnor wants to eat the cat,
right?
But I mean, all that fluffy, God, Elnor, you would never get him yeah. off the sofa. He'd just be watching Alf all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, Christopher Mock says, Riker still knows how to make an entrance, and he's definitely not afraid of threatening O which was amazingly well done. Reminded me of Best of Both Worlds, where he taunted Locutus into attacking them. Same old Riker. And Michael Bentley says, yet another instance of eye removal in this episode. Yep, one more eyeball trauma situation.
Yeah. Okay, I've gone on my Twitter rant about the eyeball stuff already. The eyeball in this episode did not bother me because it wasn't gory. It was just one of those things where you see Agnes observing that Soji goes in and she sees the retinal scan. So she gets it in her mind that, okay, well, if I have an eyeball from an android, I can go in. Now, apparently the door is coded so that any android can go in, because obviously that wasn't Soji's eyeball that she got.
Right.
The bit about Ichab earlier in the season thoroughly pissed me off, and yeah. I'm still upset about it. And
me too.
I don't care what Michael Chabon says about how they thought it was necessary. It was not. That's BS, and I'm still disappointed in that. What disturbs me is it happening in this episode, and it happened before. There's like some kind of obsession with pulling people's eyeballs out that's going on in the writing here. Disturbs me incredibly for those listening who don't listen to the Ready Room or the Orb and don't, or Notes on the Edge, and don't know my history. You know, I've had cataract surgery, and then 2 years later I had 5 vitrectomies. And you have to lie awake on the table as your eye is cut open, and it takes about 3 hours to do each surgery. And once you've been through that, watching something like what they've done in here with Ichab is extremely traumatizing. So I'm quite upset about that. I don't get the eyeball thing here, but I will say with this episode, since that's what we're talking about, that if you're going to do it, this is the way to do it.
This is the, yeah.
Not the way you did it earlier in the season.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And as for the, you know, the other comment here, Commander O, I don't know if I agree with Christopher here. I guess I can. The problem for me is not Riker. The problem for me is, this character was terribly written, poorly handled. I said this on Twitter yesterday. I think if the end game of this character was to have this face-off with Riker and she was going to be the leader of the extermination of the synthetics, from a writing standpoint, you've got to do more earlier in the season to develop this character, because you can't just have this moment where you see her talking to the Admiral who can't control her mouth and the undercover Romulan agent, and then have her wear some Men in Black sunglasses and do a mind meld, and then have her disappear for the rest of the season, and then suddenly she's on the bridge as the leader of the Romulans, and expect that to carry some kind of weight, on top of the fact that the acting was terrible. It just doesn't work for me in this moment.
I mean, we got on the grief planet, we got a little bit more there.
Well, that's true. Yes, she was there, which introduced the fact of who she was, and of course confirmed my original statement when we saw her for the very first time, that she's a Romulan.
Right.
But I don't know. This to me, actually, the whole face-off between her and Riker, for me, it just didn't quite work. And as for being like the best of both worlds, I definitely see Christopher's point there. Although it didn't carry the same weight, because I'm old enough to remember watching the Best of Both Worlds when it first aired. And prior to that, the idea of that kind of cliffhanger was just not something that was around. And I remember,
that's right,
I was with my girlfriend and we were watching Best of Both Worlds Part 1. And then he said fire and it said to be continued. And I looked at her and I'm like, what? Like, yeah. Oh my God, we've got to wait all summer to find out what's going to happen. And that's something that I think people just don't understand anymore, because that's
right.
It's just not part of television anymore that you have to wait like that.
Yeah. With that moment, I feel like is when serialized sci-fi storytelling on television was changed forever. With that very moment.
Yeah, that's what people say. I don't know if it's 100% accurate, but there's no doubt that with the cultural influence of Star Trek, especially in retrospect,
right?
I think that did play a big role.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were like, oh, we can do that? We can do that?
yeah.
I will say about O, I agree that the character wasn't written great, but I really like the actor. I think she did the best with what she was given. I felt for her in the final episode. I was like, it must have been so frustrating for her to just kind of stand there and take it, you know?
Yeah.
And you're 100% right. With it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my feeling too. I'm watching her and I'm like, I know you're doing the best to deliver the lines you've been given, but first of all, the writing is terrible. No one speaks that way. Mm-hmm. And I can tell that you don't know how this fits in, really. And so, you know, good, you're trying your best. And no disrespect whatsoever meant there. But that was definitely a weak link in this whole finale.
Yeah,
you're right. Okay, our next comment is from Brian Baum, and Brian says, first time commenter. Do you want me to sing, Chris?
I want you to do it. Yeah, I do.
Okay, you know, Matthew sings all the time on the Orb, so first time commenter.
Nice.
It's the first time, it's 10 years of podcasting on Trek FM. I think it's the first time I've ever sung.
Oh, wow.
All right. It's been quite a ride, these 10 episodes. With a seemingly happy ending, I can say I am content with the results. The space battle, in scare quotes, was gorgeous, but I would have liked to have seen the Federation rip the Romulans a new one after having it confirmed that they caused the attack on Mars. Thank you for the podcast. Okay, well, I'll start with you're welcome. For the podcast, and then Christopher, tell me what you think about this.
Yeah, I can see where you'd want to see a little bit more of a battle, but I'm okay that the emphasis was taken off of it. But I will agree, it's been quite a ride. It's been very up and down for me, too.
I'm with you there. When I read this comment, I thought, I can completely understand Brian's feeling. But I also think that, you know, if we are to progress as a species toward that Star Trek future, we do have to kind of shed that idea that we need to rip them a new one because of what they've done. I think it's human instinct to feel that way. And I think it's Star Trek to let them go.
Yeah, same.
Without doing that. About the battle being gorgeous, some people thought the orchids were really weird. I thought the orchids were cool because it reminded me of how, like in the original series, we got the like cool things, like in Who Mourns for Adonais, like the green hand grabbing the Enterprise. Like we had these odd things that would happen in the episodes. And so I thought it was cool. And visually, this battle is very beautiful because of the orchids. It also reminded me of how you do something creatively that perhaps doesn't make sense, but you do it because it will be visually interesting. Like in Star Wars, when instead of recreating The Empire Strikes Back, where you're on a snow planet, in The Last Jedi, they're on a salt planet, and the red comes up when the salt is ripped, and it creates this very striking visual of the red and white contrasting. That I was immediately reminded of that when I was watching the battle here with the orchids coming up from the planet.
I've been wondering what you thought about those.
I thought they were cool. I mean, they don't make any sense.
No.
Well, they do make sense in the fact that from the pilot episode, it was established that Bruce Maddox loved orchids.
Ah, right.
So, yeah, if they're going to build something, I mean, orchids make sense. We don't know why he loved orchids necessarily, but it made sense in that respect. It doesn't make sense to build giant orchids that float up in space and grab spaceships and pull them down on the planet.
They're pretty.
They're pretty, and it was interesting, so I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah. Jim Stoffel, a beautifully sad and yet uplifting episode. The good guys won, the bad guys and gals lost. Picard dies, but yet still lives, was beautifully done. His speech to Soji and to the fleets in space brought tears to my face. Picard's death scene brought more tears. Data being a part of the human existence, wonderfully done. Still, Allison Pill was the best character on this show. Okay. What do you think?
Well, the last line there, I don't get, but but I also think it highlights how, you know, different actors and actresses and characters connect with us.
Right.
I mean, for me, I don't know who the best character on the show is.
Sounds like you're not a fan of Jurati.
Actually, no. One thing I will say about this series is that they assembled a phenomenal cast, and I thought that all the actors did an amazing job. And like, as a character, maybe Jurati's not my favorite character amongst the group. I thought Alison Pill did a great job of portraying her. I thought that Santiago Cabrera might be my favorite. He was the most versatile actor. I thought his, you know, Rios was interesting. The holograms were great fun. The versatility to be able to play them all in different scenes was amazing.
Sure.
I think next to Patrick Stewart, he's probably the best actor in the show. But yeah, I mean, for Jim, if Allison was the best, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I think no problem at all. I have no problem with that. I think Jim's comment here is, it kind of sums up so many elements of the show. It was beautifully sad. It was also uplifting at the same time. I think that, you know, Picard dies yet still lives is something that, again, I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. I think it was handled pretty well, thanks to Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner in particular. I think the way it was portrayed was quite beautiful. And yeah, I think that it sums things up pretty well. And as far as the death, well, not the death scene so much. The death scene actually did not bring tears to my eyes, but what did bring tears to my eyes was what happened after that between Picard and Data in the quantum reconstruction. And not only did it bring tears to my eyes the first time, it also did the second time and the third time. And I think that says something. Yeah.
Yeah. Seeing Data age like that, I lost it. I was weeping.
Yeah, definitely. So our next comment, Anne Marie Siegel says, "This is my fave Star Trek line of all time, I think. To be alive is a responsibility as well as a right. It sums up what Star Trek is all about so perfectly and beautifully, and it's especially meaningful right now. Also, love postcards and can't wait to listen to this week's ep a few times or more if you release another hit single. Thanks, guys." All right. So, Christopher, that last bit's for you.
Yeah.
Loving postcards.
Thank you, Anne Marie.
And yeah, to be alive is a responsibility as well as a right. I think it is a message that I think we need in today's world.
That's my other line that just smacked me across the face. I don't know what else to say. But Anne Marie, I can't believe that you listen to postcards more than once, but I'm certainly happy that you do.
Hey, now I understand Anne Marie, because when I have a podcast that I really love, I listen to episodes over and over.
I mean,
there are some podcasts.
Some
Big Picture Science, Star Talk Radio, a few of those. I've listened to them dozens of times. It's sort of like a comfort food for me almost.
Yeah, that's almost like watching a Star Trek episode more than once. Not that Postcards is on the level of a Star Trek episode, but it's about Star Trek.
Well, Christopher, there's so many spinoff series happening right now, you never know. Postcards could become a CBS All Access original. Amazon Prime in Japan.
Sure, I'm available. I'm available to work on it.
I can't wait to hear you dubbed in Japanese.
That'd be great. And the hit single that Anne-Marie is referring to was at the tail end of last week's Postcards episode, Postcards on the Line number 11. And I was challenged to do a parody of Billy Joel's New York State of Mind, and I entitled it New Lore State of Mind, and it was a lot of fun. You'll have to listen to that episode if you want to hear it, you guys.
That explains the title of the episode.
Yep. Dan Gunther from Literary Treks, Take a Drink, says, "Fear is an incompetent teacher." Another reference to that quote. "Stunningly apt words from Picard, and yet another lesson today's world needs to learn from Star Trek. Very satisfying conclusion. I laughed, I cried, I enjoyed the show immensely. Next up, the binge rewatch." Yep, Dan, sure is. And I included another reference to that quote just because I wanted to nail it a little bit more, and maybe it's for my own good.
Well, as I said a moment ago, I think of all the lines in this finale, that might be the greatest message that we need to send to the world today if we want to change the course we're on. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for that, Dan. And our next message is from Gary Lesser. Gary says, I think Data's death in this one hurt even more than in Nemesis. I also loved that in the end, there wasn't a final battle and Picard found the peaceful solution with a little help from his friends.
Yeah.
Well, that last line, that sounds like a song for you right there,
Chris. It does. Yeah.
Write some lyrics there. What do you think about Gary's thoughts here?
It did hurt more than in Nemesis, but Nemesis was, I was more angry about it because it was so sudden and we didn't get anything after. I rewatched Nemesis before Picard aired, and the last scene when they're all together on the bridge just felt so rushed and forced. And it felt to me that the actors were kind of forced to put all this emotion into this sudden scene. And I didn't enjoy the aftermath immediately of Data's death. So this one did sink in, I think, a little bit more and felt a little bit more consciously constructed or created.
So do you mean the scene really at the end on the bridge that ends the movie? Or
not
do you
the,
mean
not the before toast? Scene, the one on the bridge.
Okay. Well, the before scene needs to be airlocked, but the but the before that, when they have the Chateau Picard,
there's
and
that too.
They echo the original series when Spock passed to absent friends.
Right.
That one still, every time I watch Nemesis, will bring a tear to my eye because I think that scene is quite well done.
That one's well done. I'm talking about the bridge one when Deanna has to be super. She asks about Data.
Yeah.
And that scene was just, I don't like that scene. It didn't feel like it honored the moment, the seriousness of the moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what really spoiled, besides the before scene, which anyone who has listened to this network for the last 10 years knows I don't like.
Which I like.
To me, it was a cop-out. It's like, okay, we're going to kill Data, but hey, look, Data's back.
Yeah.
But no, what really killed me was Picard walking down the corridor at the end whistling like everything's fine. Like, I didn't feel like it was an appropriate ending for the movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Data's death definitely hurt more here because here it's drawn out versus Nemesis where it's sudden. And like, I remember watching Nemesis in the theater and being like, did that just happen? Did they just kill Data? And it was so sudden. But of course, you know, in real life, that happens to people.
True.
You lose people that way. And then you have to cope with it. So,
yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Slinkston Hughes says, how amazing is it that Issa Briones sung the rendition of Blue Skies during the Data death scene? Mind-blowing. So meta, so deep, so Trek on so many levels. Chris, did you know that that was Issa Briones when you first watched it?
Yeah, and I mean, it depends on how you're using the word amazing here. If amazing, did it sound brilliant and was it touching for the scene? Yeah, I agree. Surprising, no. I mean, she's, I think, well known for being able to sing.
Yeah.
She's, you know, known for that. So that didn't surprise me at all.
She was in Hamilton, the national tour of Hamilton. And yeah, she's quite talented.
I thought, you know, we talked earlier about, and maybe this was on the other side of the postcard. What do we call it on here? Maybe it was before we hit record. You and I were talking about the fact that we're both creatives and we're both musicians and, you know, we see things in a certain way that might be different from other fans. I think from a creative standpoint, this was an especially nice touch, a nuance that they could have easily overlooked. They could have used the Bing Crosby from Remembrance again.
Right.
Having her sing it as Data's passing, knowing that she's essentially the offspring of Data, that was an amazing little subtle tie-in to end the storyline and to kind of show the progression of Data's passing, but synthetic life is advancing. yeah, I thought it was, in that sense, as Langston says, I thought it was amazing, and it was a brilliant little
totally
creative move. Yeah, so thank you for that, Langston. And moving on, Robert J. Geiger says, loved this episode overall. The whole season felt like a parable for the othering that we've been seeing take over our society in recent years. So finding out that this was actually a treatise on mortality was a nice surprise. Picard's death was so well done that I would not have hated if the show had left him dead and gone in a different direction for season two. This is one of the most interesting comments that we got for me.
I think so too.
And the reason is that I don't completely agree here, Robert, with the fact that it's one or the other. I totally agree with you that the othering that we've been seeing take over our society in recent years is a real thing and it's very troubling. But that's one thing, and that a treatise on mortality is something different, I don't agree with, because I actually think that the othering, the tribalism that has overtaken our society, is a treatise on mortality itself, because it's an existential threat to our civilization. That if we don't stop this othering, then we are mortal. Our society will end, because we cannot continue indefinitely with this division that has arisen in society. So I think that both of your points here are very valid as for what we've seen in this season. I think that they are two threads that we've seen through the season, and I think they're also intertwined, and I think they're both important messages.
That's very interesting, Chris. Yeah. Oh, that's a lot to think about. Do you think you would have been okay if Picard had just died completely?
I think I would. I mean, it would be weird to have a series called Star Trek Picard without Picard.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm one of those people who thinks that Voyager should have been stranded in the Delta Quadrant.
Indefinitely.
Yeah, I mean, because that's real, right?
Uh-huh.
It's sort of a, sure, they can find a way to get back. And I don't have a problem with the fact that Voyager got back. But it's a little bit of a fairy tale ending.
It is.
It's realistic to think that they would have been stranded there forever.
Yeah, and we didn't get that kind of ending with DS9.
Which is why DS9 has become my favorite series.
Oh, you
know, I grew up on TOS because TNG started when I was finishing high school. So all I had growing up was the original series. So, of course, it has a special place in my heart. But over the years, DS9, as I grew older and I lived life and I've had all kinds of things happen in my life, DS9 became my favorite series. And it's for that reason that it's real. You know, they don't tie everything up neatly at the end. Cassidy's left alone. Jake's left alone. I mean, one of the most heart-wrenching moments is the fact that the series starts with Jake looking out a window, and it ends with Jake looking out a window when he's alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's life. And
it is.
So, yeah, I think if they had let Picard die here, I would have been fine with that.
Yeah.
That would have been closure in a way. Yeah.
Janessa Quijada says, I know that there are two more seasons of Picard in the pipeline, but if it ends with only one, then this is a perfect wrap-up. And despite knowing that there were two more seasons and that the Golem was a very obvious Chekhov's gun, I still lost it about the same time Elnor did during the coda. And that coda was amazing and so relevant to where we are now. It hit me real hard. Bravo.
It's an interesting point, too. You know, Elnor is an interesting character in the show because, on one hand, I feel like he didn't do much, and it's kind of it's like pulled out of the Lord of the Rings almost. You know, he's assembling this adventure crew, and you've got this elf,
right?
Because that's how he's stylized. But at the same time, it's quite touching, especially given Picard's history on the Next Generation of not liking children, which I know evolved over the course of the series. And I think that's something that's sort of a remnant of the early years of the Next Generation. But having him here tell Elnor that I'm very, very proud of you, that meant something to me. It reminded me of Kirk and David Marcus.
Oh.
Telling Kirk that I'm very, very proud to be your son. You know, that immediately came to mind. And Elnor is not Picard's son, but in a way, he might be the closest thing that Picard has. You know, Picard had Rene, but Picard was always away. He didn't spend time with Rene much that we know of.
Yeah.
So I thought that was touching. And Elnor is interesting because, you know, he's powerful and he's strong, but he is still also a child. And in the moments he has with Picard and with Seven and with Raffi, you really see that he's that person in life who is trying very hard to be strong, but is also fragile.
Yeah.
And that's another element. You know, it all comes back to my feeling that 10 episodes was too few to tell this story. I think there's something there that could have been explored more if they had given themselves time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So our next comment is once again from Karen Tuplis. And you mentioned earlier, Christopher, that she gets very excited.
Yes.
And it's here in the all caps. You guys, guys! I hope I'm reading that correctly. The name of the ship is itself a very nerdy historical Easter egg. Zheng He was a 15th century Chinese diplomat and admiral who controlled a group of treasure ships known as the Star Fleet, beating Star Trek to the name by 500 years.
Love it.
And when I read this comment, the first thing I heard in my head was, and you people are all sailors on some kind of Starfleet.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks for that little bit of research and historical perspective there, Karen.
Thanks, Karen. Joshua DeVries says, I'm very curious to see the consequences of all this next season. How does Starfleet react to knowing there were Tal Shiar agents infiltrating them? Is Jurati off the hook for killing Maddox? Did everybody just join the Fenris Rangers? And will Seven and Raffi become more of a thing because, OMG, they're perfect together? Lots of good questions, Joshua. I did notice that they all had the same insignia when they were about to go to warp out.
As for how Starfleet would feel about knowing that they've been infiltrated by Romulan, I think there has to be some kind of inquiry. Because from the beginning, like the first time we saw O, I said, okay, she's a Romulan. At least she's a half Romulan, half Vulcan.
Right.
Who has somehow infiltrated Starfleet. But her rank is Commodore. So she had to be in Starfleet for a long time.
Right.
So the incompetence in Starfleet to not notice for that many years that you've been infiltrated, that's shocking. So that's something, I would be curious to know what happens when they find out.
Yeah, and we got so much Romulan, more exploration of Romulans than we ever have before. And to just leave them at the end as these bad guys doesn't seem right. Like, we do need to get something, some kind of epilogue to this story and the consequences. I agree.
Which is interesting because I don't know if we're going to get that. I think a lot of fans, from what I see in the chatter on social media, a lot of fans are assuming that this is going to carry over into season two, and season two is going to be the aftermath of the storyline that we got here. But Discovery would suggest otherwise.
Hmm.
Because, you know, Discovery, each season so far, we've only had two of them, but they've been self-contained stories.
True.
There are some repercussions, I guess. There's a little bit of carryover, but not much. It's certainly not DS9 or Enterprise style carry through from season to season. The thing that struck me, you know, we got that announcement. We got the announcement before Star Trek Picard season one aired that CBS All Access had picked up the show for a second season. But the show had already been shot and produced. So it does make me wonder if the original concept here may have been for Picard to die. And once they knew they were going to move forward, he became synthetic so that they can carry the series forward.
Ah.
You know, I don't know if that's the case. The writers could certainly tell us if they honestly tell us.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I don't watch the after shows. I didn't do it for Discovery either, largely because, you know, I do notes on the Edge for Discovery, notes on the line for Picard, and I don't want to be too colored by things, which is why I don't read social media very much, and I don't listen to podcasts about it, because I don't want my own thoughts to be colored too much by other people's thoughts. So I don't know what's already been said, but just as a viewer, my thought in watching the end of the season is that we might have gotten like a last minute, hey, we need Picard to be around so we can do another season. Whereas originally, this may have been a send-off for him.
I can see that.
So it's possible that season one was conceived as a standalone story, and season two might be its own standalone story, and there may not be any carry through at all, or it may be minimal.
Maybe we'll get another Aftermath comic, too.
Yeah, well, that's quite possible. That actually would not surprise me at all.
That's likely, yeah.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Amy Nelson, I think I've heard of her before. She shared a comment with us, and she says, Raffi and Elnor's scene really got to me. Raffi is such a warm and motherly character. She is so understanding and tried to get to know each of the crew on a personal level. That was very evident throughout the season.
So, love Raffi. I think that there are a little bit of inconsistencies with the writing of her character, but I think Michelle Hurd did a really knockout job with some very quality material that she was given that Mike could have used a few tweaks here and there. But I do love that she has this coarse, seemingly coarse kind of exterior because all of the demons that she's battling. But she still really, really cares about people a lot. And that's really important to her. And she follows her gut, even though she sometimes can't take care of herself in the best way.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought she was a very real character. And I thought Michelle Hurd did a fantastic job of portraying this character. And particularly, you know, there are those moments, well, throughout the series, there were many moments where she had to play against Patrick Stewart. And
is not easy.
She did such a good job. Well, it's not easy to play against Patrick Stewart in the first place. And in the role of Picard, he's so iconic. And you're accustomed to every Starfleet officer looking up to him like, oh my God, it's Jean-Luc Picard. But she was not like that.
Yeah.
And I thought she played the role extremely well. As someone who's had an enormous amount of turmoil in my family life growing up, as someone who did my very, very best as a parent to prevent that in the lives of my children and was successful almost till the end, but I didn't quite make it. I completely understand where her character is coming from. And I think that Michelle Hurd portrayed a very realistic character. And we did get that moment with her son. And I think that the regrets that she has in her relationship with her son inform how she interacts with Elnor here, which is what Amy's talking about. You know, in that sense, this is a case where I do think that Michelle Hurd and the writers, the series as a whole, did a really good job of delivering some realism to us.
Yeah, I love that observation. That's great. Chris Hill, I loved this episode. Picard finally being able to tell Data how he felt about him and his sacrifice. It was great seeing the new Federation workhorse class and Riker being his badass poker-playing self. Overall, I'd rate this season as one of the best firsts in all of Trek. Picard's sacrifice says everything you need to know about not just the man, but the message of Star Trek. Yeah, I really agree with that last sentiment, Chris. And that Picard finally got to start to tell Data that he loved him, but Data already knew it. Chris, what do you think about Chris saying that he thinks this is one of the best first seasons in all of Star Trek?
Oh, boy, man, that's a loaded question. You know, I mean, what's the best first season? It's hard to say. Like,
yeah,
if you go on strength of episodes, I think that the original series might have the strongest first season because that season is absolutely loaded with fantastic episodes.
True.
The Next Generation is pretty weak in the first season, but it was an experiment. Can we reboot Star Trek? The budget was low. Mm-hmm. You know, the writing was so-so. there are a lot of factors there. I think each series got progressively better with its first season. You know, DS9, a lot of people criticize that first season, but it's a lot stronger than you think it is if you go back and you rewatch it.
Definitely.
I think Voyager had a good first season. I think Enterprise had a really good first season.
Mm-hmm.
Discovery, it was fine. I mean, it's hard to compare Discovery and Picard with all those past Star Trek series because I feel like we are getting these self-contained stories. We're not building like a something that we think is going to go seven seasons. So it's a little bit hard to say. I don't know. Like for me, again, this story was average.
Okay.
And as a story, it was average. There were some phenomenal performances. There were some moments that were cringeworthy.
Yes.
But, you know, it was a solid first season. That's what I would say.
I will say, Chris Hill, that I think that it is the Star Trek first season that has had that has been the most thoughtful, most thought out, perhaps the most conscious decisions that have been made because of considering the entire legacy of not only the Next Generation, but Star Trek generally, in my view.
Like looking back at what's come before and they're trying to
right
tie in, or they're trying to build upon or comment on, or
right, because they're doing that and they're also introducing an entire new group of people, an entire new crew, entirely new crew, and doing all of that at the same time cannot be easy with a bunch of fans that, you know, we feel like we all have ownership over the franchise, so you know, we're all gonna say how we feel about it.
That's one of the things, actually, today, not just in Star Trek fandom, but you see it in Star Wars and other fandoms as well. This feeling amongst fans that we have ownership over the franchise and we have ownership over the material. And I would say we don't.
Right.
It is important for creatives to consider how we might perceive what they're writing, but it's their creative work. We don't own this intellectual property. We're invested in it, but I think that, you know, if a writer does something that you consider a misstep, I think that the way to look at that is, I don't agree with what you did. I'm going to just not let it influence how I view the show, my headcanon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're the God computer, right? They're the ones that are, they're the creatives in control, not us.
Yeah. It's their creation, right? We might do things differently, but I think that's a problem, with fandom these days, for sure.
Definitely. Well, thank you for all of your comments. Let's move on to your questions and concerns now.
All right. Questions and concerns. One of my favorite parts of postcards.
I like the questions and concerns on notes also. So I've definitely been missing the notes podcast a lot, just to let you know, for the record.
I've also been missing notes, and my life has changed drastically over the past 30 days, so hopefully I'll be able to do notes again, as I did before, and eventually I'll go back and do it for season 2 of Discovery as well, because I have a lot to say there.
Yes.
One reason I like questions and concerns is that I think it's a little bit more objective, which is how I approach my analysis of Star Trek in general. And Billy Wells Logue says, "So once again in Trek, death isn't real and it's not final. What was the point of showing people mourning him? From the first moment they showed us that Gollum, I knew that was going to happen. Data's end was beautiful and moving, but also tainted because of what they did with Picard. I did not like this finale." Okay, so I totally see Billy's point. Absolutely, I see Billy's point, because it's actually about how I felt at the end of Nemesis with B4. I don't necessarily agree here, however, but what do you think, Christopher?
I see your point, Billy. It brings to front my conflicting ideas about Picard being quote unquote reborn as a synth, and I can see why Data's end was tainted because of that. I can see it. I'm still not through figuring out what I feel about all of it. So I appreciate that you do, Billy, and that you feel so strongly about it.
So for me, I don't think that it tainted Data's end at all, because Data's end was his own end, and he made the choice, and Synth Picard released him, and I thought that was beautifully done, and it was a nice commentary on mortality. I think that Picard's continuation as a synth maybe somewhat tainted Picard's death. That I totally get.
Yeah.
Which goes back to how I felt at the end of Nemesis with Data's death, which I thought was very appropriate. And then B4 showed up and I thought, well, the writers, they don't have the guts to do what they set out to do. The point of showing everyone mourning Picard, however, is separate from Picard's actual death and his resurrection as a synth, because that speaks to how the loss of someone impacts you on a personal level. And also, Picard is dead. I think that's something that we have to remember here. And that's why, like, watching season two, I don't know how I'm going to react to that, because every time I see Picard in season two, I'm going to know that's not Picard.
Yeah.
That's not Jean-Luc Picard. That is an android that is carrying the memories of Jean-Luc Picard, but it's not Jean-Luc Picard.
Right. Star Trek hashtag not Picard.
Right. So, yeah, for me, it didn't taint anything. And certainly his resurrection as a synth does not diminish the emotional impact that his moments of death had on Raffi and Rios and Elnor and Seven.
Sure. You know, though, thinking about this comment and what you're saying, Chris, in Nemesis, Data chose to transfer his memories to B4. He also chose to die, to sacrifice himself for Picard. And he also chose to die in this season finale. Picard did choose to die, but he didn't choose to transfer his memories into an android. He didn't make that choice.
Yeah. Right. It's a very good point. And it's a huge question.
You know, what's the implications of that? Because Jurati and Soong did that.
So that it's an excellent question. And I think it's something that so far I haven't seen being discussed, is what does it mean for human consciousness to be transferred into a synthetic form, whether it be a synthetic body or whether it be just a neural network. I remember, so Norman Spinrad, who's a great science fiction writer, he wrote what I think is probably a little known novel called Deus Ex. And Deus Ex, spoiler alert, in case you're going to go read this book, which is very hard to find. Deus Ex actually turns out to be a reference to a pope, Pope Deus Ex, the 10th. But in that book, humans have begun transferring their consciousnesses into a computer network. And so what does that mean for us as humans if we shed our flesh and blood bodies and we become synthetic? And I actually think that's part of the commentary here in this season of Picard, and at the end in particular, but it comes right at the end. So there's no opportunity for the writers to comment on it. But I think that's a question being raised, and I think it's a very relevant question for our time. And I can't remember when, but I believe I made a comment on Twitter some months ago, because I write about a lot of this stuff as a journalist, and I had said something about the fact that, I know what it was. I went to a conference at Mori Art Museum. They did an exhibition called The Future in the Arts, and it was about humanity and artificial intelligence and the future of cities and civilizations. And at this seminar that I went to, there was a professor of robotics from a university here in Tokyo, and there was a lawyer, and they were talking about synthetic life, and they were talking about advances in the development of robotics. And the lawyer was talking about what kind of rights should be given. For example, if a human wanted to marry an android or a robot. And that's something people are starting to think about. And I mentioned on Twitter, I believe it was, that, you know, this was very interesting because this is going to be our reality in the near future. And of course, in true Twitter fashion, I got completely attacked and slammed down about how stupid I was for bringing this up. But I actually think that the person that was attacking me is the person who is wrong, because if you really stop and think, if you're being intellectually honest and you really stop and think about how rapidly technology is advancing, if you look ahead 20 or 50 years, certainly from my perspective in Japan, where I think we are and we must employ robots in the near future just to survive as a society, because our birth rate has been negative forever and our elderly population is overwhelming our youth, it's something we really have to think about. And so I think it's a very relevant question that's being asked in this season of Picard, and it comes up at the end, so it can't be commented on.
Right.
But to me, it's very fascinating. And like you're saying, Picard, he did not ask, to go back to why I went down this rabbit hole, Picard did not ask to be resurrected. He chose to sacrifice himself for others. He was resurrected by other people, and now he has to live with that. So what does that mean?
Yeah. And the closure that he got
that's
with...
That's a big question.
Yeah. And the closure that he got with Data in the simulation, that wasn't Picard either. That's the copy. And so...
Yeah.
I mean, it's very layered. A lot of things.
It's very layered. I think it's a lot more layered than people are realizing at the moment. But I think they might start... Like, this conversation might start to come up.
Yeah.
As people rewatch this several times and they kind of get past Riker on the bridge and this kind of stuff, and they start really focusing on some of the nuances that are here and some of the questions that are being raised.
Yeah, this is why I was saying that I feel like this episode, and specifically the coda, is the most evolved philosophically moment of Star Trek, because there's just a lot to consider, and it defies conventional humanity and life and death and all of that. It's in an other kind of category that we're starting to explore, like you said, in the world.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if it's the most philosophically evolved in all of Star Trek, but it's absolutely true to Picard. It's 100% true to the Picard character and the reason that we all fell in love with this character in The Next Generation.
Yeah. Suman Dewan says, so the whole series was about Picard getting closure on Data's death and being able to say goodbye to him. A little disappointing. What's going to keep the Jat Vash from completing their mission they have been so intent on for years? They just need to secretly come in and wipe it all out. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I think Suman's observation that the whole series was Picard getting closure on Data's death and being able to say goodbye to him is pretty accurate. At the beginning, I was feeling like this series is a follow-up to The Measure of a Man. And in many ways it is.
For sure.
But it's more a follow-up to Nemesis than we realized. I don't think it's true that the entire point of the series is about Picard getting closure on Data's death. I think that's an oversimplification. But I do think that it can be read that way. And I do think that that was a very strong point of the season, as evidenced by the coda. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's disappointing, but it is part a very big part of what the season was about. As far as the Jat Vash completing their mission, again, this goes back to what I said earlier about fans assuming that this story has not ended and it's going to carry over into season two. Mm-hmm. I think in modern television, we would expect it to carry over. We would expect that we're going to get some kind of closure to that story. In reality, I suspect we won't. Mm-hmm. You know, the story wasn't really about a standoff between the Federation and the Romulans.
Right.
And it wasn't about Commodore O or General O. It wasn't about
the artifact
it wasn't about that
stuff.
Artifact.
This was the setting. Like, it's like, you know, it's like The Walking Dead really isn't about the zombies, you know?
Right. So I think it's done, you know? I think...
Possibly.
It's like Discovery, the Klingon War. Klingon War is done.
Right.
The Klingon War was done halfway through the first season when they didn't know what to do anymore, so they jumped to the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, we carry Laurel with us. There's a little bit of Klingon holdover. Season 2 was not about the Klingon War. It was about something totally different. I think that we're going to see the same thing with Picard.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I would prefer to see serialized storytelling that carries over from season to season.
Right.
But I just suspect that given the atmosphere and the precedent set by Discovery, that probably the Jat Vash is a relic of season 1 and probably won't come up again.
Yeah. In the novels, I think, but maybe that's it.
Oh, in the novels. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Liam Smart says, ugh, I don't even know where to start with this. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen, but boy, was it underwhelming and disappointing. It didn't land that ending at all, and I feel a lot of people only liked it because of Data. And that wasn't even the point of the season. I give that 8 nopes out of 10.
So Liam and I got into a little bit in DMs, and I'm sorry, Liam, that I got short. I was like grumpy, and I kind of told Liam I thought that that was kind of the point, was Data's full, complete cycle of experiencing humanity. To me, that was that, like we said with the last comment that Suman said, Star Trek at its core isn't really about Romulans and Klingons and all these other little things. It's about the human adventure and the human experience. We just love it because we're nerdy. We like sci-fi. We like all of these other little things too. And yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, Liam and I agree on a lot of things, but I think this is a case where we probably don't agree. I think that it was the point of the season. I think Data's story was actually more the point of the season than anyone realized.
Same.
Until we got to the end.
Same.
The problem is that it was the point of the season, but that wasn't conveyed along the way sufficiently.
There was a lot of wandering around it.
Yeah. I feel like the writers maybe went into development of this with that in mind, that this is the story of Picard and Data and the closure that was missing from Nemesis. And they took us on this other journey. They started us out there. That's what I noticed last night when I watched Remembrance again, having finished the series and watched the final episode twice. What I noticed was that, yeah, Remembrance, it sets it all up even better than you realize when you watch it the first time. And the finale closes it really well, but there's all this meandering along the way. Now, the Picard part isn't necessarily meandering, but there's all this noise in this story. The artifact, the Borg, the Romulan siblings that seem to have some kind of weird sexual attraction to each other.
Yeah.
There's all this noise in the story that distracts you. And then you get to the end and then you realize, no, wait a minute. This is about Picard and Data after all. So I think it was about them. I think that was the point of the story.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't agree here, no.
And I do think that a lot of that noise really took us away from Picard and his experience and what he was going through too. There were times when the focus was so much less on Picard for some of the episodes. Not that I didn't mind it sometimes, because a lot of characters were kind of dismissing Picard a lot. And that started to get a little bit old for me. But we did, you're right, we did wander away from that. There was a lot of noise. I'd say I agree with that.
Yeah.
Chris Foster says, did anyone else think that the snake arms of the artificial intelligence coming through the portal looked a lot like some things we saw out of Discovery Season 2? Just saying. Yes, Chris, definitely. And Chad Edwards.
Yes, Chris, definitely.
Yeah. And Chad Edwards says, I'm honestly stunned at all the love for this random assembly of events. This show broke my heart, and not in the way they intended. Oof. All right.
I think that's a little bit harsh. I do understand where Chad is coming from. I wouldn't call it a random assembly of events, but as we were just saying, you know, with the artifact, with the Borg and such, there is a lot of noise thrown into this season that's not necessary. And I do feel like a lot of it was put in to bring in fans. Like, hey, look, we're going to have the Borg. The Borg is, it's a little bit tricky, right? Because there is no doubt that the Borg connection would have an impact on Picard. But you don't need the Borg connection to tell the story of Picard and Data.
Right.
You don't even need the Borg connection to tell the story of synthetic life. This is another case on Twitter where someone told me, hey, the Borg aren't synthetic. You're dumb for making the comment you made. Thank you, Twitter.
They are part synthetic.
The Borg are part synthetic. And in fact, the Borg, in a way to me, are more interesting than soon type androids are, because the Borg more closely represent our probable path as humans. I like to joke that I'm part Borg because I have a synthetic lens in my eye.
Mm-hmm.
So the lens in my left eye is artificial, and it allows me, well, if I didn't have oil in my eye, it allows me to see perfectly because it's not real. And that was implanted. But it's a very tiny, minor thing. But you also see people who have lost arms and legs and hands and all kinds of things where we are using synthetics to augment the human body.
Sure.
And that's only going to increase. And that's what the Borg do. The Borg, they didn't build completely artificial life forms like Data or Soji or Daj. They combined organic and synthetic together, which is what we are doing. So the Borg represent our path more closely than Data does. And so in that sense, the Borg makes sense to me. But within the context of this story, which is about Picard and Data, you don't necessarily need the Borg. It doesn't hurt to have the Borg, but you don't have to have the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
This is my guess, okay? I have no idea what's in the minds of the writers. In my mind, I think the origin of the Borg being included in this story goes back to Picard's assimilation as Locutus. You want to have some connection to Picard. Okay, it's the Borg. Now we have the Borg. What else can we do with them? Well, we can bring Jerry Ryan back as Seven of Nine, specifically because, you know, people like me who were in high school when The Next Generation aired, we're getting older. You've got all these younger fans who, for whom Voyager was their first Star Trek, and they love Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
Well, if we can bring Jerry Ryan back, we can hook them into this new concept. And then after we bring Jerry Ryan in, oh, why don't we bring Hugh back in? Because that's a personal connection for Picard. Now, I'm being very cynical here, but it makes sense as a thought process.
It does make sense, yeah.
When you look at how little the Borg actually had to do with this story, it really starts to feel that way for me.
Yeah, it certainly was very cool visually and getting to see these characters again, but I don't disagree with that.
It was visually beautiful, I will say that. So, if nothing else, we got that shot of the cube with the waves on it.
Yeah,
as we talked about earlier, and that was fantastic.
And a lot of cool-looking XBs.
A lot of cool-looking XBs, for sure. And the next comment is from Nick Corsello. And Nick says, an excellent last episode in all respects, except one. What was with that entire Federation fleet being made up of one class of ship? It was great to see Riker and all, but it would have been awesome to see at least a few of the ship types we've come to know and love. Okay, I'm with Nick here, personally. How do you feel?
I did expect to see more variants, but second watch, I thought it was kind of cool that we just saw this solid, unwavering rock of a Narmada in the Federation that was just like, bam, powerful. It was like a wall, you know, and all the bricks were there. And it's different than what we've seen before. And I thought it was a really cool choice.
I can see that. So initially I'm with Nick. The first time I saw it, I was like, what on earth? Come on, guys. It's 2020. You got to do better with the visual effects than this, because this is just lazy. At the same time, if I want to take another look at it, when we see things like in The Best of Both Worlds or during the Dominion War on DS9, you get the impression there like Starfleet is doing their very best to assemble some kind of fleet. You've got Murata class ships in there, which should not be in service anymore. And like, my God, what can we throw together to try to protect ourselves? Whereas here, like you say, it's like a wall. Here are all of, these are the most powerful ships we've ever built. And we've got hundreds of identical ships. And if you think you can get through this, good luck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see it that way.
It felt like they were just not screwing around.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't just, like you said, not this haphazard mishmash of a bunch of different ships.
Yeah. But I will say that I didn't even start to think that way at all until my third viewing. And so I think, again, creatively, that's a problem. If you've got to watch it three times before you come around to that idea, I felt like it was sort of an afterthought. I mean, I know they spend a lot of money on these episodes, and I know that visual effects do cost money. But I also know that visual effects today don't cost nearly as much as they used to.
True.
And you've got 3D models of all these ships, and you could have put some variety in there. And I think back to The Next Generation and particularly DS9, where the creators, they were creating things at a time when they didn't know this stuff would ever be viewed in HD.
Sure.
They thought it was always going to be SD and you wouldn't be able to really see what they were doing. But they cared so much about what they were doing that they put the time and energy in to creating just incredibly detailed and diverse ships and graphics.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that I think the people working on Picard don't care, but I do think that it's striking kind of the difference there, that at a time when you know that the stuff's going to be viewed in HD on 4K TVs, that you just have hundreds of identical ships on both sides of the battle. And even the warping in and out effect, I just personally don't care much for.
You don't like that pop in? I love it.
I don't like
it. I love it.
I don't like it.
Oh, I love it.
Like, I get it. And I know that that's a common way of dealing with this in modern sci-fi. And it normally doesn't bother me too much. But somehow here, it just didn't feel right. It felt too much like the appearance of the fleets, the standoff, and then the retreat of the fleets was, it's like a video game moment.
Okay.
Detached from the story. Yeah, it didn't, and I still feel that way after watching it three times. So I think that's saying something.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. But again, that's my opinion.
Right.
Doesn't mean that's how everyone feels, and it doesn't mean they should change how they do it. Maybe it's just that in Star Trek, I kind of like that easing in and out
right.
from warp mm-hmm. kind of thing. And I started thinking, like on the third viewing, as all the Starfleet ships were warping out, I started thinking about like, where are they going? And is it safe for this many ships to all be zipping out together this way?
Sure.
And that's a distraction from the story that I think I don't necessarily need.
Okay. Chad Edwards has some very harsh criticism. He says, a vaporous, empty vessel of an episode, devoid of real stakes and meaningful writing. Data is magically alive and then euthanized. when was he still alive again? Everything solves with a magic ocarina, magic holographic construct, and magic cyborg body. Yay, I guess. Looking forward to when Kurtzman is let go. Well, that is not likely to happen anytime soon. And Chad, I appreciate how the conviction and strength of your opinion, although I disagree.
Yeah. Okay. There was some magic in here. There's no doubt. The magic ocarina. It's the ultimate Deus Ex Machina.
Absolutely.
And of course, I saw it coming at the end of the first part of the finale when she hands it to them. Yeah. And like, what does it do? Like, just use your imagination, you know, like it just does whatever you want. I mean, like you run out of beers during your Super Bowl party, just hold on to this and you'll all be refreshed. You know, it just does anything you want. I don't know. I'm kind of torn. Like, I feel like, okay, if you can create androids that are as advanced as these androids are, then maybe you can create this kind of thing. There is this line. It gets lost because the scene is so ridiculous when Jurati holds it up and like all the Jurati faces appear, which was a horrible scene that's not going to age well at all. When you watch this 20 years from now, you're going to go, oh my God, what on earth were they thinking when they made this scene?
I think it was funny.
Did you? I hated it.
I think it meant, maybe it was meant to piss people off a little bit.
Maybe, you might be right. However, when all the visuals happening, she says something in there, which I can't repeat right now, which I think was a little bit of technobabble to explain how this device works. So if you go back and listen to that and you think about it a little bit and you're willing to be flexible, maybe this thing won't seem as ridiculous to you as it does right now.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to say about that. Also, when things like this come up in stories, I feel a little bit like, okay, we have a limited amount of time to tell the story and we have certain plot elements that we have to advance quickly. So how do we do that? Okay, let's have this like magical device that can just fix the ship and like make hundreds of ships appear that can somehow fly on different trajectories, even though Jurati's head wasn't flying around in different ways. It was identical. Like, I'm willing to go with that because I know it's not the point of the story. I'm more interested in the philosophical point of the story.
Sure.
So it's fine. But I completely get the point of Chad's observation here. I understand. As far as like letting Kurtzman go, this is something that does bother me about fandom these days. Everyone screams, well, J.J. Abrams has to go. Kurtzman has to go. Let's rewind a little bit. There was a time when people were saying Berman has to go, Brandon Braga has to go.
Yeah.
You don't hear people say that anymore. People now watch Enterprise and they say, wow, you know, this is a good show.
Mm-hmm.
But when it was on, people were like, Berman's burned out and Braga doesn't understand Star Trek. Like, guys, Braga was writing since The Next Generation.
Right. Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. So, you know, people get caught up in this. And when it comes to Kurtzman, people don't like, I'm not a big fan of the Kelvin timeline movies myself. You might not feel like everything he does on screen works for you, but the criticism of, you know, Kurtzman doesn't know Star Trek, that's just false.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you think that, then it's fine if that's how you feel, but it's not true. And it's the case with most all of these writers. They do make decisions that I think are strange. And there are people on this writing staff who I know Star Trek completely inside out. And yet,
right,
there are things happening in the writing that just baffle me. Like, mm-hmm, what on earth are you doing? But it doesn't mean that they don't know Star Trek. And it doesn't mean that they don't love Star Trek. And it doesn't mean that they don't understand Star Trek or respect canon or the franchise.
True. Yes.
So that's just my feeling on that. So, you know, if you don't like Kurtzman and you want him to go, that's fine. And I understand. But I do think that that's something that's thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of irresponsibly. Mm-hmm. Let's just put it that way. Okay, moving on. Jason Sorensen says, Galaxy's cruel irony. Picard fights Soren, Borg Queen, and Sona in an attempt to prove that humanity is at its best when we try not to cheat death, live eternal, become entwined with tech, or seek magical fountains of perpetual youth or perfection. And he ultimately will live out his final days as the antithesis of those monologues and speeches he made. I'm not mad or upset with this outcome, just realizing it doesn't seem congruent with those earlier themes of Trek. Okay, so Christopher, I think this, I don't agree necessarily, but I think Jason's observation is a good one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What do you think about it?
I feel the same way. I don't really agree with it, but I think it is an interesting observation, and for to point out that it doesn't seem congruent with those earlier themes is, I think, justifiable.
Hmm. I think my thoughts on it, they're sort of separate. I think Jason's right in the basic thing that he says here. But if we go back to the idea that this season of Picard is the story of Picard and Data, And if we think about how Picard championed Data throughout TNG and how much he cared for Data and how much he supported Data's pursuit of becoming human, there's something kind of interesting about Picard becoming synthetic himself at the end. And I don't know if I can put it into words yet. It's something that I'm thinking about. It's something that I'll probably talk about in notes when I finally get to this. I think the issue is more complex than what's presented here.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something, it's just this intertwined nature of Data and Picard. It's something that, of course, we saw it in the series, but when we got to the movies, Generations not so much, but say First Contact, when we see what happens with Picard and Data, there's that advice to Data, you know, to turn off your emotion chip when you're dealing with the Borg. And we see Picard go back for Data. Earlier in the movie, when we see Data talking to Picard, and Picard tells him how, you know, touching the missile is important because this tactile nature, it has a meaning to people. Like, all of these elements about this relationship between Data and Picard, they sort of lead to something to me that I think might make Picard's transition to becoming a synthetic life form himself sort of the end of another journey that we hadn't thought about before.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about, and it's a lot to for the writers to think about, too.
So get on that season two, everybody.
Right.
Writing that season two.
Yeah. Jason also said that if the trial never ends and Q last left Picard with the promise of "you'll see" for the next great evolution of humanity, is this it? Where artificial, cybernetic, and synthetic life all bends seamlessly together with humanity to create some next level that Q has always teased about? Also a good point.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this one yet, but it's a very interesting comment.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to include that because it was another all good things kind of tie-in, which a lot of people have been talking about during this season.
Yeah, I know a lot of people kind of wanted Q to come back. I think it would have spoiled the season, though, because,
yeah,
again, this is about Picard and Data. But what Jason says here is interesting, and if you go back to what I was saying a little bit earlier about our real path in real life being more akin to the Borg, this kind of combination of artificial, cybernetic, synthetic life and humanity kind of blending together, I do think that's where we're headed. Like, yeah, if we could fast forward hundreds of years or thousands of years for sure, I do think that's where we're headed as a species. And this comment's interesting. And as for whether that's what Q was teasing, yeah, I don't know. But
yeah,
but something to think about for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to your deeper thoughts.
Oh, man. Deeper thoughts. So the only thing I can see here is SNL. I'm looking into a mirror and I'm like, I'm good enough to read these comments.
Well, that's Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy is different than Stuart Smalley. Those two different sketches.
It is, right.
Yeah. Right. Both really great.
They were great. Okay. Rhea Papagiorgio says, it wasn't about a massive synth organics Romulan Federation showdown. After all, it was about individuals and their choices. Picard, Soji, Seven, Agnes, Raffi, Alton, Data, O, Riker, Narek, Narissa, Hugh, sweet, sweet Elnor, sexy, sexy Rios. This is so much more timely now than the writers could have predicted. Picard trusted Soji with the choice. He led by example, not by force. What a beautiful example for all of us. So I think this is a wonderful comment. And
yeah,
it takes me back, Christopher, to what I always say about Deep Space Nine. It's what Matthew and I say on the Orb over and over. There's this great misunderstanding in fandom, generally amongst fans who never watched DS9 because, you know, they bought into that early, oh, it's dark and, you know, there's a war and such. And people think, oh, DS9, that's the show about the Dominion War, and Gene Roddenberry wasn't about war. But as I always say, DS9 is not about the war. And if you think DS9 is about the war, you don't understand the show. DS9 is not about the war. DS9 is about the people. It's about Sisko and Kira and Bashir and Miles and Garrick and even Dukat and Damar, and how all these people are affected by the events that are happening around them. And so I think what Rhea says here about this season of Picard, it's spot on. It's not about the Romulans and the Federation having a standoff. It's not about the Jat Vash and the synthetics or any of that. It's about the characters. It's about the broken pieces. It's about how they find themselves again.
Yeah.
And how they you know, kind of find peace at the end. And they're able to move forward in their lives.
Yeah. Paloma Bennett says, my favorite moment in the finale is when Picard and Data speak in the simulation. I love how Data tells Picard that life means nothing without death. He truly understands humanity. Also a great comment, Paloma. Yeah.
It's a wonderful comment. And I'm not old yet, but I'm getting older. And, you know, when I was young, when I was in my 20s, you know, the idea of death was terrifying. And as I get older, I start to see more and more what Data was saying, that, you know, the idea of living forever, it takes the meaning out of life.
Right.
Like if you were immortal, then those moments in life, those moments with the people you love, wouldn't have as much meaning.
You know, this might be a good moment to read a quote that I wrote down last night that really, again, this is the number three quote that just impacted me very deeply. Not just the fear about fear being an incompetent teacher, and if you're alive, it's a responsibility or whatever. But Data says, mortality gives meaning to human life. Peace, love, friendship. These are precious because we know they cannot endure. I mean,
yeah.
I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking about that and thinking about people that we've lost, or, you know, relationships that I have with people who have lost people that are close to them, and feeling the impact that they're feeling. And it's not a comforting thought necessarily, because again, et in Arcadia, you know, ego, also in this paradise and this wonderful thing and this place, there's still death. It's just like this, it's just this paradoxical kind of thing that we get these amazing contacts, we get these amazing relationships, and the very thing that makes them so amazing and special is that they're not going to last forever. Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little misty-eyed.
No, it was a wonderful line. Absolutely wonderful line. And again, that's why I feel that regardless of what happened along the way in the season, the ending of this is just so true to Star Trek, because these are the kind of statements, these are kind of the moments that in Star Trek of the past, we latch on to. And it's the reason right. that we love the series, and it's the reason that it inspires us.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to Rebecca Skipper, who's been with us on the network since almost the beginning, I think, and is always delightful in her comments.
Isn't she wonderful?
She is wonderful. And Rebecca says, my favorite scene is the conversation between Data and Picard after Picard's death. Data says that mortality makes friendships even more valuable because they are finite, which is, of course, what you were saying there in your comment. And I love how this series is treating death and the aging process. Data doesn't fear death. And I love that message.
Yeah. I jumped the gun a little bit on your comment, Rebecca, but yeah, I love this. I love this topic.
But Rebecca reinforces what you just said, and I think it's very important. And, you know, I just said that as I get older, my views on mortality change, and I will not say that I'm at the point yet where I don't fear death. But when I was younger, I was kind of in awe of people who were elderly, much older, who don't fear death. And I thought, like, how is that possible? But as I get older, I feel myself inching towards kind of an understanding of how you can reach that point where you feel that you've lived your life and you start to understand the need for closure.
Sure.
And that sounds kind of morbid. And I don't mean to sound that way. And again, I'm not there yet. But when we're talking about creative writing and we look here, I mean, we're dealing with a character in Data who potentially could have lived forever. And I think what a horrid state that could be, that you live forever and you just watch everyone around you die. You know,
right.
This has been the subject of science fiction stories, mm-hmm. and Twilight Zone episodes.
Buffy.
And, you know, I mean, it's a recurring theme in fantasy and science fiction. And there's a reason for that, because while when you're young, you can't imagine it, it is something that does become troubling, I think, at some point for people, as it did for Data. And so it's a good observation and I think an important message in this season.
Definitely. And for our final comment for this postcards episode, which I believe is going to be the longest postcards episode on record.
Well, that's because you had me on, but Christopher, if you had me and Larry on,
oh God,
I mean, we would only be about halfway through right now.
Right, so, right, yeah.
So if anyone wants to hear marathons, come over to the ready room with Larry and me. I mean, we will talk Star Trek to you until you cannot take it anymore.
Yeah, I'd apologize, but I'm really not sorry about it. This is really fun, and there's just so much to talk about. And I mean, you know, Chris, the listeners just provide so many insightful things.
They do, yeah, which is the great part of the network.
Yeah, and then when you have two people who really love to talk and whose imaginations wander off too, it just goes on and on and on. But for our final comment, JJ Becker, who has provided some very interesting observations throughout this season, says, "A joyful and nostalgic journey leading to a somewhat dark but richly philosophical conclusion. Though, quote, all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death, end quote. Still, quote, somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true," end quote. Well, thanks, JJ, for another kind of like a nice punctuation on all the things that you've said over the last 10 episodes.
And I'm glad we got a philosophical conclusion to season one of Picard, because that's what I would expect from any series involving Jean-Luc Picard and Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, we got the diplomatic and the philosophical conclusion. They're both of them.
We did. Yeah. You know, I might have my issues with the ride, but I think that we got to the destination that we expected.
Sure. All right, CBJ, how do you think the fans responded to the season one finale of Star Trek Picard?
Well, I think they responded as I would expect fans to respond. I think there was a nice mix of those who, you know, get excited about seeing familiar characters and those who look deeper into the story. And the one thing I noticed here, you know, when I read through, you compiled the comments that we were going to read today, and I read through them. I think that was a day ago, or maybe this morning. I lose track of time. And I'm kind of like Soren, you know, I'm like, I just need to live in the Nexus where time has no meaning. But, you know, I read through them and I thought, you know, there's a good mix here of people who loved it, possibly blindly, people who did not like it, possibly too critically. But that's what I would expect from fandom. And the reason is that Star Trek, it means so much to us. And I think often we react very strongly to what we see on the screen. We have expectations for what we think the writer should do with the stories and the characters that we love. And we're not always happy with that. And sometimes maybe we're too eager to be happy with that. And so we don't notice flaws. So the mix that I see is what I would expect. I hope that what you and I did today is what I always try to do now 10 years on this network that I created on a whim, sitting here in this very room that I'm in right now as we record, is just to bring kind of a reasoned exploration of Star Trek to people. Because, you know, the material's there. in the case of some of it, it's been there for more than 50 years and we can rehash it all we want. But the fact that we are able to rehash it and get new things out of it all the time speaks to the strength of what Gene Roddenberry created. And, you know, I hope that the people that commented today listen to what we said, and whether we agreed with them or disagreed with them, maybe they will think further about the episodes as they rewatch them and hopefully get new things out of it, because that's what I've heard for the past decade on the network from people who have listened to the podcast, that, hey, you know, you made me think about this in a way that I didn't consider before. And I would say that our commenters make us think about things in a way that's different than we think about them. And I hope that's what, you know, Postcards is able to do for them as well.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's so touching. They definitely do that for me. I have had my issues with this season, and I've talked about them a little bit. And my boyfriend and I talk about them. Listening and reading the comments from everybody really opens my mind up in a different way. And it has made me not change the way that I think about these issues that I have, but help me see a bigger picture and help me kind of look at things from a different perspective. And I think, to your credit, one of the things that's so amazing, again, I've talked about this, is that we have so many different opinions here in the Babel Conference, but so rarely does it escalate to any type of toxic fandom. Yeah. or nastiness or anything like that. And I think that that is just such a huge credit to what's been built here. So thank you for that.
Well, it's not me. It's everyone who's involved in the network, but I'm glad that I was able to start it and try to keep it going all these years. And, you know, it's thanks to you and everyone who's a host on the network and all of our listeners who look for creative and constructive dialogue on Star Trek that we've been able to, I feel, as you said, mostly rise above, you know, the norm in social media for Star Trek. So I hope we can continue doing that. And thank you to everyone listening for contributing to that. I really appreciate it.
Be sure to check out all of our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show is Tracks on the Line with Mike and Max.
And we'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard. And the best place to do that is, of course, in the Babel Conference, as we were just talking about. That's our listeners group on Facebook, where we collect your feedback for Postcards. And also, you know, as you're listening to shows on the network, we do a post for every episode, and you can continue the discussion that you hear on the podcast right there with the hosts and your fellow listeners. And to find that, again, just go to Facebook and type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field, and it should come up. If it doesn't, then just type the Babel Conference and you'll find it. It is a moderated group. It's a private group. If you're listening to this, chances are you're already a member, but if you're not, you will need to answer a couple of questions so that the hosts can let you into the group. And then you can join in the conversation. And you'll also find us elsewhere in social media, on Twitter and Instagram. Our username is TrekFM. And if you like good old-fashioned email, you can go to our website at trek.fm/contact and use the contact form there to send us an email. Just choose to send to a show and select The Line. And that will come not only to Christopher, but to all the hosts of all the different Line shows, and also to me.
I like that email is old-fashioned now.
It's old-fashioned. To me, it is. It's like, we use Basecamp, right, to manage the network. And I've been using Basecamp for, I think it's like 10 years now. It's for a long time. And I use it for all my work as well. And today, people were sending me email because people are working from home right now, you know, because of the coronavirus lockdown. And they're using regular email, but we usually use Basecamp. I'm like, man, why are you guys using email? Because go back to Basecamp. It's easier to find stuff. So yeah, for me, email, it's a little bit old-fashioned.
Yeah, same. I really like Basecamp because I'm so like, I like compartmentalizing, and I'm a little bit OCD. Exactly. And so like, yeah, everything just fits into its nice little, oh, it's satisfying. Yeah. This is not a commercial for Basecamp, by the way.
But if you would like to sponsor us, Basecamp, we would be more than happy to have you aboard.
Well, Christopher Brian Jones, thank you so much for being here today and taking all this time and you know, meeting with me and talking with me and reading all the listener comments. It was really a lot of fun talking about the season one finale with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. As I said during the show, I think I mentioned, I will do notes on the line for this season of Picard. I actually have some of it done now. I just haven't recorded. And I'll be doing that now that I'm quarantined for 14 days after my son returned from London. And Tokyo is probably on the verge of a 21-day lockdown. I got a lot of time on my hands, potentially, so I'm going to try to get that done. But if you would like to, you know, follow my comments on things, you can find me on Twitter at C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username. That's my username everywhere in social media, although Twitter is where I'm most active. And if you'd like to find me elsewhere on the network, my main show is The Ready Room. That's the original show, which I started in 2011. Even though CBS decided to just take the name and use it for their after show.
How dare
I'm
they?
Hoping that I'm... Well, I mean, I can't complain too much about Will Wheaton because I love Will. But
yeah.
I'm hoping that, you know, 'cause my show will continue to be around for years to come, I'm hoping I might get some residual exposure from the fact that that my 9-year-old podcast has the same name as the current after show for Star Trek Picard. But anyway, you can find me there.
All right.
Larry Nemechek and I do that show together these days. We have for the past couple of years. And prior to that, it was a panel show, and it might become that again. You can also find me on The Orb with Matthew Rushing, talking DS9, and of course, Notes from the Edge in the Edge feed, where I talk Star Trek Discovery by myself. And if you go dig through StarTrek.com, you can find my writing over there on the official site. Where I used to write, although I haven't in a while, but maybe one day I will again. So yeah, but anyway, thanks Chris for having me on. And I don't know how you do this on the postcards, but I know people want to talk to you too. So where do they need to go for that?
Well, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield. And of course, I lurk in the Babel Conference.
Lurking. So that's you that I see keep popping up here and there on the Facebook page.
I mean, I've been lurking for a while before I started hosting a show.
I think the other thing that's lurking around is that cat that Elnor wants to see, but hasn't been able to find yet.
Yeah.
I think it's lurking around the artifact.
Oh, gosh. Borg kitty.
Oh, my God. Now, there's some fan art waiting to happen.
Oh, that'd be great. I love those Next Generation and TOS kitty mugs, that coffee mugs that they have. Oh, they're so great. All right. Well, we've had so much fun. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. Listeners, join us very soon for our Picard Season 1 discussion on the next Postcards on the Line. Actually, do you want to go ahead and close it out with that, since you're the initial, you're the captain of Trek FM?
I don't know. It's okay. It's your show, so maybe you
come on, give us a hailing frequencies open.
All right, everyone. Hailing frequencies open.
Never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so bright.